Hey guys! Today we have Candace Thomas with us, who is a principal game designer at Riot Games. In the past, she also worked at Blizzard, where on World of Warcraft, she designed the boss, Lanethel, the Blood Queen, which I think is incredibly cool. She gives us some super unique insights about the whole process from QA all the way up to principal game designer, where she is now. And she is just super smart, super down to earth, and gives really helpful advice. So stick around. I hope you enjoy the episode. And as always, if you have any questions for any of us, leave them in the comments down below. We'll be sure to answer all of them. And if you like this kind of content, like and subscribe for more. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hi guys, how are you doing today?
Hey, doing great. I just got back from watching Shang-Chi, which was really, really good. I was impressed.
Oh, awesome. I've heard that one is good.
Yeah. How about you, Candace?
Doing great. I actually saw The Protégé last night, which was also pretty amazing. But I look forward to seeing that movie on Monday, hopefully.
Oh, I haven't heard of The Protégé. What's that one about?
It's just another kind of like John Wick style revenge flick. Very good. Very good.
Oh, I saw that one. It has, what is it? The woman from Discovery in it, right?
Yeah, and
the Queen.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she's been doing really well in a ton of roles lately.
I hope you don't mind, Candace, but I did a little bit of Twitter stalking of you last night.
All right.
And I saw that you made a post that said that you don't necessarily prefer small talk, but what you do think is better is if somebody asks, what's on your mind lately? So, what's on your mind lately, Candace?
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's a deeper question. If someone says, like, how are you doing? The correct answer is, I'm doing fine. Because, like, the real answer might be, well, like, I'm really tired because I didn't sleep last night because my cat was being awful. But it's, like, too many words, especially in passing. If you're just, like, passing someone by on the hallway, it's like, hold on, everybody stop. Let me tell you about how I'm actually doing. So it kind of like begs you to be disingenuous. But yeah, when you ask someone what's on their mind, you're taking it a step deeper. And I feel like you'd have to stop and ask someone that. But yeah, I guess lately what's on my mind is moving. I'm moving to Santa Monica pretty soon for my new job. And I'm really excited about it. And I cannot stop looking at apartments.
Oh, wow. Ooh. I'm sure that's taking up a lot of your thoughts. What is the new job that you are going to?
It's a new job in the sense that I started back in March, but it's new because we don't have to return to the office for quite some time. So my new job is I just started at Riot Games as a principal game designer.
That is so exciting. So as a principal game designer, what would your responsibilities be? What do you do?
You basically lay the foundations for the game. It'll differ depending on what project you're on and what the life cycle of that project is. We're really early on the game that I'm making right now, so I'm really like building the foundations of the design for the game. So things like, you know, how should this entire system feel, or what does it feel like to fight monsters, and then like, you know, building the infrastructure both in the design and also like in the tools and stuff like that. Like, you're the person who basically like lays all the foundation for more designers to come in and build out that content later. You're building the content yourself as well, but you just kind of like just determining what the best practices is and what the principles are, and like you're the one that's the closest to the material. So given that I've been making encounters and bosses and monsters and kind of like experiences in MMOs for like 15 years, that's the kind of stuff that I like doing. So
just a little bit of experience doing that, right?
Yeah.
That's actually how we first started working together, right? It was way back at Blizzard. What expansion was it? Was the first one you worked on?
Wrath of the Lich King. As a developer, I started in Burning Crusade in QA as a contract temp, but then I came to the development team proper in 2009. And not to say that QA is not the development team, I'm sorry, but that was the nomenclature at the time.
Yeah, it was a very different culture back then. One of the things I really like about Riot over Blizzard actually is how Riot integrates QA people as full members of the dev team, right? There's usually someone on your team who is a member of QA who is looking over the work that a programmer, you know, an artist, engineer working together on a single project. I really love that structural change myself.
No, that is really nice. Actually, most of the modern studios that I've worked at, I worked briefly at Amazon Studios as well. They have embedded mm-hmm. QA as well. I think it's more of like when you move from having like contract temporary QA and then you have more in-house, it kind of just makes more sense that they're embedded. But whenever they're contracted, there's weird, I don't know, the boundaries that do or shouldn't or sometimes exist. But yeah, I agree. Having an embedded QA team that is also, you know, salary or not salary, but you know, they're on the same
full members
of the team, way advantageous than having people who are kind of like low context or less engaged with the project.
Yeah, I remember when I joined during Brown Box on the WoW team, and I got in trouble for going down and talking to QA too many times. Like, I was specifically told you're interacting with QA too much and being too friendly with them. And I was like, what? There's this very strict hierarchy that existed back then that I'm glad to see is, you know, dissolving.
I wonder, that's interesting and shitty. Sorry, can I say that? That's terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fine. We swear plenty on this podcast. You're good.
That's awful, mm-hmm. especially because like someone who comes from QA, that hurts my soul to hear that they would not want you to speak to us. But also I wonder how much of that is also QA being seen as like a sanitized audience. For example, like if they're going to take the first pass on something, but they know what the design intent of it, they might approach it differently. That's like being as generous as possible as I can for something that sounds pretty terrible. But I also, because I was accused of thinking too much like a player and not a designer in my younger years. Younger is the wrong word, but like less senior years in game design. And though because it was 15 years ago, I think that the words used were that I was mother henning the community. So not a great look these days. But yeah, I do wonder how much of that is like they're trying to separate have a sanitized audience that is QA, so they're kind of like unspoiled in that way. But B, also they're afraid of the influence that having too much connection with an audience and not thinking like a designer really really has an
I answer. See. Well, so I for know, those I, who don't things, know, what does QA represent? What does that mean?
Right. We should go over a few terms. I'll go and take this. So QA stands for quality assurance, right? It basically means people go in, they test the experience, they give initial feedback, and they make sure they kind of make sure they understand what the design intent and whether it's delivering on that design intent. A couple other terms we used a little earlier, principal designer, right? Candace explained is like basically a designer focused on the craft of the game. Which is different from a lead designer, right, which is focused on the team building the game itself, which is different from a director who is kind of like setting direction but doing less of the specific design decisions and implementation. So if you hear all those words, they all work together, but they all have very different purposes and focuses.
Okay. So Candace, you started out as QA, you said?
That's right. I spent my first 2 years, 2.5 years in games, testing, finding glitches, giving feedback to primarily World of Warcraft, primarily also the raids and dungeons of World of Warcraft, but also did a brief stint on StarCraft 2.
Yeah,
oh, very cool.
I recall you giving me plenty of feedback on plenty of shitty encounters that I was working on at the time.
Fantastic work in progress encounters.
Thank you. Someday they got there with the feedback from you guys, but there were some rough ones. In fact, let's actually go through some of the encounters that you worked on, not just as QA, but as a developer. What was the very first one you did, either on your own or paired with a senior designer?
I think that I'm not sure I was ever actually paired in my whenever I was newer to the team. But if you played World of Warcraft, for the first contribution I had to it was actually in the raid zone, Icecrown Citadel. And I was supposed to just—I was paired for that. I was paired with you, but we divided, right? We didn't really work together as much. But we did, like they call it trash. It's basically the encounters between the boss encounters. I think At BlizzCon once, Jeff Kaplan said that TRASH stands for Tactically Random AI Spawn Heuristic. So it's not like garbage, right? It's like very high quality, especially if I put it in the game, super high quality. But yeah,
it's expensive trash, very bougie trash.
Yeah, and then repurposed. But then randomly, it was determined that there needed to be another boss in the zone, and that there weren't enough people to do it. And so I ended up getting given like a very prestigious like end wing boss as my first boss to implement, and I was really excited about that, and I really had a lot of fun with that.
That was the Blood Queen, right? That was
Blood Queen Lanethel. I even got to name her. It was very special.
Oh, can you tell me about the Blood Queen? Because that sounds so cool.
Yeah, that was my first boss ever. It's hard too, because in World of Warcraft they tend to have like a wing structure to their raid zones. So it's linear. Like, so there'll be branches, and then you can go like down this wing and fight 1, 2, 3 boss, and then this wing 1, 2, 3 boss. And then it's expected that the final boss of the wing is supposed to be like harder or more complex in some way. And so being given that as my first boss was very nerve-wracking, because I feel like I didn't know what I was doing yet. I had not really like proven myself, or I didn't know what stuff was gonna be like when it went live. Like, I know how it goes on in my head, but then how players are gonna receive it, I kind of felt thrown into the deep end. But it was a really it turned out okay, and I had a really good time doing it.
Yeah, wow. I remember working on the trash actually with you in that dungeon, because like you said, we actually split it up. We did some fun things with the trash there too. We remember we had like the trap triggers, right? You'd walk through a hallway and skeleton would wake up. There was a whole bunch of sequences with the, I forget what they were actually called in the game, based on the vampire people, pulling orbs and elements out of the environment there. We had a whole bunch of animated sequences. And did you do the, you also did the lead up to, what was the other boss that was in there?
Oh gosh, this is forever ago. 15 years is so long.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Putricide? No, you did Putricide.
I did Putricide.
But I named
I
Stinky
did...
and Precious.
Yes, that's right. The two, and that was the one we had the weird bug trap in the middle, right? Where the bugs would just swarm you. There was no purpose to it. It was just to annoy the players. They went in there.
Yeah.
Stinky and Precious?
That's right.
Stinky, Precious. I remember I hacked in a little... Was it you or did I hack in the little bow? I can't remember.
Yeah, you hacked it in. But we thought it would be funny if... Because the joke is that they're enormous plague hounds. They're something like 20 times bigger than the player. But we thought it would be funny to name them something that like Paris Hilton would name her dogs. You know, like something small and like unassuming, and then
like a little Pomeranian,
or something. And then we thought it was really funny to like the fantasy of that, of if Precious is wearing like a ribbon, like a pink ribbon. We found one from like the Valentine's Day event. If Precious was wearing this giant ribbon, that would be like several times larger than a shirt for a player. And so there was actually a shirt made called like Precious's Ribbon. The fantasy is that you made a shirt out of the. Anyways,
that is so cute.
Very cute. Very good times.
Yeah. Was that Travis or Owen who got the shirt in for that?
Probably Owen.
Probably Owen. He was always great at those things. Like, Owen is one of those guys that was always super under the radar, worked really hard, kicked ass on things, and just was always. You just ask him to slip something in, and he would do it for you. Like, no questions asked.
Good times.
It sounds like it was a lot of fun to work on that project.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really hard to leave eventually. I'm like a lifetime World of Warcraft player, and I love the game so much, and so many of my friends and so much of my like community plays the game. Then eventually I felt like I had reached my ceiling there, and I wasn't really going to learn much, and there wasn't much room for like advancement, or you know, if I wanted to flex my leadership skills, there just weren't a lot of opportunities for that. And so I eventually went over to the Diablo 4 project, and it broke my heart, but it was a new set of like invigorating challenges and an amazing team. So I don't regret it at all, but I did miss World of Warcraft a lot.
So when you switched over to Diablo, then what position did you take on with that team?
So it was similar in capacity. I was still a senior game designer, which is where I had left off on World of Warcraft. But it was in a very different role. So And this is what people will mean when they say, like, it really depends on the game that you're working on, the team structure that you're working on. Because on a team like World of Warcraft, you're, like, as a contributor in a contributor role, you are kind of, like, siloed to your team. Like, the encounters team that are making dungeons will work really, really closely together. But you don't have to worry about, say, like, there's a whole separate pipeline for, like, visual effects and for animations, and whereas you'll have some input, especially if it's something new, you'd have to say, like, I have a boss and it's like a chest up boss and he's got to go like this, 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 or whatever. You'll have some input on it, but the teams are kind of segmented, so they'll have their own pipeline and structure that they're working on. You'll have your own, and eventually you'll cross, like, you'll get your asset or whatever. It was very different on the Diablo team because it was more of like a pod structure where a lot of us cross discipline would come together with the ultimate goal. So if it was like make a boss, then there would be an animator and a VFX artist, and we'd all have to work in lockstep to eventually like ship this creation that we all came up with together. And I learned so much about collaboration. I learned so much about how like good design isn't just good design on paper. It's design that like serves the player, serves your needs for like personal satisfaction, or just like it either meets the vision that you are going for, or it wasn't. But also, like, no matter how good of a design that you have, and no matter like what your intentions are with a design, if you can't work or collaborate with a team and get a team excited about it, and sometimes that requires that there are compromises, or sometimes they give you an idea that's completely out of left field, that's amazing, that really like plus ones the design, right? Like learning to collaborate in that way, I feel like was a huge growth movement for me, because I was able to think outside of the box a lot more given the feedback from all these other people. And I learned that if people aren't on the same page, the amount of time it takes to ship something or get something into playable like status will be exponentially longer than if everyone is like understands the vision, they're all on board with the vision, and they're all plus wanting it with their ideas. There's just like a night and day difference. And so like I feel like even though I didn't change titles, I didn't go from senior to senior two or to principal, I feel like I learned so much going to that team.
So yeah. It was just sort of a better system.
I mean, better yes and no. I mean, it's better, like, I would say, like, for me personally, I did enjoy that environment a lot more. But for results, like, if you're looking for something that's established, like a 15-year-old game like World of Warcraft, there's so much that you can, you're not, like, pioneering a lot. You're pioneering a new mechanic or you're pioneering a new story, but, like, really the rules of World of Warcraft are pretty set, right? There's, like, the golden path, which is, like, questing, and there's all those systems involved with that, with, like, looting quest items and kill collects and escort quests and all the stuff that, like, yes, you can innovate on and you can add more to, but I feel like you don't have to like pioneer a ton of new game systems or gameplay very often in those kind of games. So it doesn't really require that much collaboration because everyone's sort of on the same page. Everyone understands the baselines of World of Warcraft. We understand the art style. We understand the rules around what the fantasy looks like and what the monster should feel like. And so it's different strokes for different folks, you know?
Yeah, so this totally actually leads into where I'd like to take some of this conversation, which is, you know, I'd really love to have you walk us through the stages of your career, right? Because you just talked about how, you know, the dynamic change from going from WoW to Diablo. And that's very similar to my experience going from WoW to League of Legends to Ori, right? It's just been those dynamics change. You grow so much learning different ways of collaborating. I'd love to hear about your personal growth. And if you just kind of start with QA Candace, and then Associate Designer Candace, and then Better Designer Candace on WoW, then Best Designer Candace on WoW, and then jump through each project and just talk about how you personally had to grow in each of those stages to make it to the next stage.
Sure. So, so we'll start with QA Candace. QA Candace was brand new to the gaming industry. Did not know if she wanted to stay in the gaming industry. I'm going to stop using third person because it's real weird. I didn't know what I wanted with my life or my career. I was still going to school. I was waiting to join the UCI, which is like a University of California, Irvine, for the pharmacy program.
Oh, but wow.
Really? Pharmacy?
Yeah, when I moved down, they were full. And so I was like, oh, I'll take a contract gig working for Blizzard, like my dream company, but it's just a pipe dream. Video games aren't real. Like they
definitely not real.
Like programmers, right? I didn't even know game design was something. But I went in with, you know, a lot of enthusiasm and with a lot of heart, and I wholeheartedly actually enjoyed QA. I almost wish it could have been more of a career. Because there's just like a lot of camaraderie, and for someone who's analytical like me, picking things apart, reverse engineering, that's like half the fun. Which mm-hmm. eventually that kind of mindset actually helped me grow as a designer as well. But yeah, so just coming in kind of like fresh face, not knowing what really goes on, and as I was discovering the game industry, I was like, oh, this is cool. This feels like a place where I could thrive.
Yeah. And as a designer, right, who, you know, kind of heard back from the work you did, the reports we always got back was there's this woman named Candace who was whipping the entire QA team into shape and getting them organized and showing up consistently to test stuff, which I don't think people understand that at that stage, right, even through Brown Box and, you know, Burning Crusade, it was really all over the place, right? Whether we would get testing, when you would get testing, things like that. The feedback formats were completely inconsistent. It would change with every single lead. And you showed up and things just started working smoothly. I'm sure it was a lot more chaotic on your end than that, but we just kind of noticed this sudden change in how good QA feedback was.
That's wonderful. Thank you for telling me that. Yeah, I think that was just, again, it was just getting everyone aligned with the vision. Like we want to. It's not, sometimes it's not as simple as 25 people showing up and wanting to raid. You know, you have to say, well, the purpose of this test, we're going to really, you know, crank out phase one, and then we're going to try phase two, but, you know, and try to like separate your mind from this thing. And yeah, the feedback was the part where I feel like it had the most potential for improvement, because there's such a thing as constructive feedback and there's such a thing as not constructive feedback. And so, for example, like you can say you didn't like something, that's fine. Like negative, yep. Positive, however you want to call it. You can be like, I didn't like this mechanic. Or you could say like, this mechanic fucking sucked. Or you could say like, fire this person. Like all of those things are basically saying the same thing, right?
Ouch.
There's,
ouch.
I know there's more professional ways to say it, obviously. But it's still not constructive. Even if you said, I like the encounter, this is my favorite encounter, this is the best thing I've ever done, still not a very constructive piece of feedback. What am I supposed to do with that?
It doesn't say what's good or what's bad.
It's
you
not
know what to do
exactly.
With it.
So I always told people it needs to be specific enough to be actionable. Either like do more of this thing or don't do this thing, and try not to prescribe an answer, because we are not here as QA. It's not our job to make the answer. We're supposed to say like, hey, we feel like we didn't have enough time between this mechanic and this mechanic. Whereas normally someone would say the fight needs less health. And it's like, no, it doesn't need that. Well, that's not up to us to decide if it needs less health. We felt like there was too much health because, you know, there wasn't these time between mechanics. So anyways, that's like a super aside. But again, though, I guess that goes to show that even in like the earlier parts of my career, I was very interested in getting people aligned and getting people like on the same page, which I guess like reverberated into the rest of my career.
Yeah, it seemed like you had kind of an innate understanding of what the process needed, and then you made it happen.
Yeah, just identifying the gaps and then keep it going smoothly, guess and check.
Yeah. Now, had you done a lot of raid leadership before QA?
Yeah, I was, I think that's why I got hired. There was a wave of hiring QA analysts where it seemed like a lot of us were hardcore raiders. So I was like a leader of a top 50 US raid guild, you know, no big deal. It's like a world eighth twin X, you know, like server first for sherzies. But you know, there's a level of understanding of the game you have to have in order to compete at that level. And so I think that the team found that valuable, and yeah.
Yeah.
So and then, not a so, casual interest.
not at all. No, that's pretty hardcore. I mean, I opened Encourage on the server I was on, which was BlackRock, but I would never put my guild anywhere near the rank that yours was, right? I was just like squeaking by as the other hardcore guilds were like doing the stuff on my server. And I'm just kind of like tailgating it. all right. So Candace, at that point, right? So your career moves forward. Things move into Burning Crusade. I remember a couple of people moved off to start working on Titan. Then we ended up bringing you, and was it also Morgan at that point? Did you both come on at the same time, or was Morgan before you?
Morgan was about 6 months to 8 months before I was, yeah.
Okay, but so it was in that expansion. We brought both you guys came on as designers. What was going through your mind when you finally made that jump?
It was funny because I spent 2.5 years in QA, and they were kind of brutal. Like the crunch was pretty extreme. The pay wasn't great. I was sharing a house with 4 other people. I couldn't afford a car. There were some problems with it, and so I told myself, this game industry thing is the pipe dream that I thought it was, right? So if I can't see myself making this into a career, I really need to go back to school. I had this notion that my credits were going to expire or something. That's like not a real thing.
Yeah. But it's funny how those artificial pressures that weigh on you even when you start in your career. Like, I started at Blizzard before I graduated from college, and people in my life were infuriated by that. Like, oh, you're going to come back in 2 months and do it. I'm like, no, I'm where I want to be. Why would I go back to reactivate this tool?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so when I applied for the World of Warcraft position, I want to say it was like in February of 2009 or something like that. I told myself, if I don't get this job, then I'm going to quit. I'm going to quit altogether. I'm going to go back to school, because I had missed the registration for school for that. And I was like, oh, this would be perfect timing for me to come in on the summer and like get back into the program. And I was going to swear off games altogether. I actually, side note, I tried to swear off games in college as well, because I knew I couldn't do college and video games at the same time. And I like I might have sold my EverQuest character. But I was like super hardcore in EverQuest as well. Like 16-year-old me killing Avatar War, you know, my like hardcore EverQuest raiding guild. But I ended up getting the job, and I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to do this for a couple more years and see how this goes. And I kind of steadily got promoted every like 2 to 2.5 years up until the senior level, which I guess was weird, but, I felt thriving. I felt like it was a career. I felt like it was what I wanted to do. But for a long time, I wondered if I would ever be able to make a game that wasn't World of Warcraft. And that was something that like stuck with me until I got even to a senior level. But
And that was a very solid promotion track for comparison, right? You did a bunch of things that were really effective. One, you were good at the content you're creating. Two, you didn't ruffle a lot of feathers in frustrating ways continuously, right? For me, it took 6 years to get my promotion from associate to mid-level, right? That was because I was always arguing with authority, kind of getting in my hair. And then all my stuff was always super chaotic and experimental and led to lots of development backends, which kind of just goes to show that emphasis you had on working within the team and with the team to execute what you wanted, as opposed to just, you know, me playing mad scientist rogue, right, had very different trajectories career-wise.
That totally makes a lot of sense. Because, naturally, as a manager, you want to promote the kind of behavior that you want to see more of. And there wasn't a lot of value for someone who went rogue and did crazy or super imaginative new things. But not to say that that was bad, though. I think that doesn't make you any less of a designer. But I also don't think it makes you any better of a designer. So, it's all about collaboration, because some people make games by themselves, and oh boy, I can't even imagine, but it takes a village. So
it does. And I think that's probably one of my bigger arcs, right, for me, was trying to basically go from the, all right, I know I have all the chaotic ability to create anything, but what can I deliver at high quality, right? And figuring out where the balance is in between those.
That's a real
perfect. Go ahead. I was gonna just segue that over to you, actually. What was your start and end arc?
That's actually a perfect way to segue too, because I feel like when you come in as an associate level, the lowest level of designer, you're very unsure about yourself. You've never shipped anything. You don't know how it's going to turn out. You don't know if it's going to break horribly. You don't know if anyone's going to like anything you've put out. Just like any other art, you know, you feel very vulnerable. And for me, it's kind of compounded also by, I was amongst giants. I was joining a team with like Jeff Kaplan on it, who was my personal like mentor. Well, not mentor, because didn't really get mentoring, but like, what's role model? Role model is a better
role
word.
Role model. Okay.
Someone you looked up to.
I looked up to him a lot. Yeah. And even during the EverQuest days, I would read his blog posts. And when I found out he was making an MMO, I was like, oh my God, I got to like play this MMO. but what I mean is like people on the team were very senior, in both like their tenure in games, but also their tenure like on the team. So me coming in as an associate, there's that dissonance of where do I, you know, how do I rank among these people, and what's the expectation of me? But then also you have to add that I was very new to games in general. So some people can come brand new to a team, but they've still had some games under their belt and they've had some experience in their back pocket, but I had none of that either. And then also to kind of like add insult to injury, I was one of the only women on the team, on the design team at least, and the only woman on my sub team. And I really can't overstate how important it is to have representation in the workplace, because I didn't have any role models for really important things that seem like they shouldn't be important things, but just like how does a confident, high-performing woman speak to men on this team? Because the way that I spoke to the men on the team was from that other like down looking up kind of angle of like, I need to be accepted. Everyone I need to fit in onto the team. I don't know where I belong on this team. And so like, maybe I need to change my personality, or I also felt this deep need, and I can't explain it now that I'm like a mature woman, but I felt like I needed to make it safe for these men to work alongside a woman. And so sometimes that meant, you know, making jokes that I didn't want to make, or getting comfortable with things that kind of made me uncomfortable, or, you know, using the same language that they were using and stuff like that. And so I felt like this enormous pressure to prove that, no, you can hire women. It's okay. You can hire more of us, and kind of like become the people around me. So I feel like if there was someone in leadership, if there was like a woman in leadership I could have looked up to, I could have seen what the role model for that kind of behavior was. And maybe I could have like been more of my own authentic self at the time.
I think it was the only person even close to that was Wendy, who was on environment and exterior art, right? The dungeons and so on. But it's not the same as being in design, where you often have to go toe to toe with other people on a regular basis to get your ideas out there, express yourself, and be understood, right?
Yeah.
So it's true.
And it's honestly, just, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's so unfair. I mean, it's a pressure that I think a lot of people, especially people in the gaming community, can relate to. Even just in social situations, I felt the way you're describing. I worry all the time about when I get a job in the game industry, what it's going to be like, because it's not just your social status that's at stake. It's literally your job and your career advancement. And that's so stressful. And it's not fair to have to think that you are like the mascot of women and you have to make women seem cool to all of these men.
Yeah.
Women are great designers. So there should be women designers on the team.
Exactly. Yeah.
Especially when you go back, like Brenda Romero has been around longer than most of us have been alive as a designer, right? Like just period, right? So it's really frustrating, right? Because if you don't have those day-to-day role models, you know, I had things like I got to watch how Greg operated and interact with people. I got to learn how, you know, Cadwell handled problems at Riot at high level, right? So I had all these people to interact with and basically look up to. I actually, in my case, you know, I had that role model at, you know, Cadwell at 13. I was age 13. I have to reach out to him when we were playing StarCraft together. And so when I was getting into the industry or wanting to get in the industry, he was, you know, a mid-level associate designer on War 3. And I was like, hey, what the fuck should I be working on? He just gave me a list of things to begin doing and integrate with my life, right? And it doesn't sound like you had that opportunity, you know, with someone who could display not only the intellectual and craft side, but the social side of game development.
Yeah, and how fortunate you were to have a mentor like Tom Cadwell. I work with him now. I think that he's a monument of a human. So there's a lot of that uncertainty, and I think that uncertainty also manifested in my designs and in just my feeling of kind of like it's half of a feeling of inadequacy, but it's also half that imposter syndrome that they're going to find out, you know, like they shouldn't have hired me, that I was a bad call from the first place. And that manifests in like, then you shrink in meetings and you don't want to be called on for questions because you're afraid that you're not going to know the answer and you're going to look like an idiot. But when you're a senior designer, you've made so many bad choices in your career. You're like quite literally demonstrably an idiot. And so fire away, right? Ask me as many questions as you want. And I can tell you that I failed at this before and get comfortable with your failures. I just wasn't in my first year and I didn't feel like I didn't have a mentor like Alexander was saying. And I didn't have, and a lot of this is also my fault. You know, I didn't look to anyone, but I didn't feel safe asking questions. So I didn't grow. I did my best to prove who I was and to prove that I had the chops to do it. And I didn't grow a lot until I got the confidence and I overcame my imposter syndrome. So that's why I'm so passionate now about like even being on this podcast. Like I'm not here to represent Riot, right? I'm not here to endorse the school that Brazzy has going on. I'm here in the capacity as like a woman talking to other women and maybe even, you know, people of color and other marginalized people to say like, hey, this is possible. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to ask for mentorship. Shoot your shot, man, because other people are. So anyway, like off my soapbox.
That's a great soapbox. No, I actually want
to beyond the soapbox.
I want to give some examples. Do you remember Eric Maloof on Quest Team, right? Well, when I started, he was one of just many people would play spawn, set up simple kill quests, etc. One of the things that he did at some point was this guy was probably, you know, been on the team 2 or 3 years longer than I had and was easily a decade older than me, and came to me at one point and said, hey, Alex, I want to learn how to script and code because I want to make more advanced stuff. And people on the Quest team aren't doing that except when they can steal Jeff Goodman, who is the other technical guy on the team, to do it. Can you teach me? And I was like, sure, right? And he would stay a couple hours late and I would just sit there and like, here, and he like, I don't know how to do this. I would build it for him and then explain it to him. And that was one of those examples where even though I was like junior to him in the hierarchy, he used that connection and socialization to get the information to unlock everything that then he became one of the most, you know, novel quest developers on the team, right? Like just took off and all the other quest designers began role modeling him, right? And that'll happen because he just came to me one day during BC Crunch and said, Alex, I want to learn how to do something that I'm, you know, uncomfortable with.
And you have to be unafraid to ask for that kind of help. Because, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, for me at least, I'm just like an amalgamation of every cool person I've ever met in my whole life. You know, I've taken the mannerisms, the vernacular, the drive, the ambition of the people that I admire. And so, like, I think that's like a very human thing, right? That's why we're tribal, you know, we multiply off of each other. And for whatever reason, we get that pride that stands in the way and we're terrified to ask. And man, if anything, if I could tell myself anything, it'd be, man, ask for help, ask for a mentor. Yeah. Go straight up to Jeff Kaplan and say, hey, man, I'm new at this and I don't know if I want this. Can you help me? Because now I know he doesn't have sharp claws and dripping fangs. He actually would have helped me. And so, but yeah, so then I guess I graduated out of that. I got promoted to mid-level and then the mindset kind of changes, at least mine did, because then I felt I'd shipped enough content. It had gone live, gotten enough like positive feedback. I've had like bad things happen. Obviously we've all had, you know, misses in our career.
Hey, I only crashed with, Northrend about 16 times in the first day of launch. So
Winter Grasp. Great job.
Winter Grasp. Yep. Divide by zero error.
But then the question wasn't like, can I do it? Whenever I got to mid-level, it was like, do I have time to do it? Because at that point, one of the ways that I overcame my imposter syndrome was, one, I decided if I wasn't going to be the smartest designer in the room because I don't know everything about game design, I was going to become the best implementer. I'm going to learn everything about the tool. People who have been working there for 10 years are going to come and ask for me for help. And that's whenever I cured myself of my imposter syndrome. When someone who was very senior on the team, the aforementioned Jeff Goodman, said like, how would you implement this thing? I was like, yes, I'm good at something.
You were sharing a pit with him, right? You were part of the actual encounter designer pit at that point.
Yep. Right. We all worked together. Yeah. And I also decided like, if I might not be the like most inspired person on the team. I might not have all the ideas or have all the authority, but I'll be the easiest to talk to. And so if you have a good idea, you can bounce it off of me, and I'll kind of like absorb that, you know, just by being like an open and receptive human. I just I gain so much. But then, but because I had the power, so like at this point, I can do anything, right? Like the tool bends to my will. If it was like the Unreal Engine, I could. I saw this video where someone like remade Diablo in 7 days in the Unreal Engine. I was like, that's kind of the level of proficiency that I had with the tool. And so I felt like I was unstoppable. It was just a question of how much time do I have? Can I do something? But then when you get to senior levels, that's when you start asking, like, should I do something? Like, should I put in this like wild and crazy game mechanic that is actually kind of divorced to the rest of WoW's gameplay? And as a mid-level, you're thinking, hell yes, I want that challenge. I want that prestige. Stop me. I dare you, right? Like, you have this all this confidence. But then with that confidence and with failing a lot, it you get the wisdom of saying, you know, like, maybe I can, but I shouldn't, you know? What is it? It says, like, science never asked. Science always asks if they could, never if they should, or something like that.
Yeah, there's actually, I have a Wyatt quote that I think is really applicable to this power arc. And he's like, when you're an associate designer, we hand you one of those little squirt guns full of water. You can, you know, pull the trigger on it as much as you want, but you're not going to do too much damage. You get to associate, we're handing you, all right, here's like a AK-47. Use it wisely. We're going to ask you if you ever fire it, right? You get to senior, and now you've got a heavy 6-bullet magnum, right? And you can kill, really do some damage, but you're not, shouldn't fire it too often. When you become a director, we hand you a sniper rifle. You can kill absolutely anything from any distance, but every time you pull the trigger, everyone in the team is going to be terrified and scared that they're next. So you'd be really damn sure when you pull that trigger. I think that really applies to that power growth of your own decisions too. What do you push for? What do you advocate for? And what do you let it go?
Yep. And
let me go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to change the subject a little, if that's okay. I just wanted to go back to when you talked about reaching out to people. Hmm. I kind of want to know how to reach out to people, because I feel that in the past, or across the past 10 years or so, people have become much less accessible. You can't just find somebody's email, especially if they're a big deal at a company. So how do you reach out to people? How do you ask for that help?
I'm actually really glad you asked that question, because I feel like as someone who's, once I started dabbling into being a manager, your mindset shifts again. Mindset shifts again, sorry, to where you are no longer responsible for the outcome of the game through your own actions, but through the actions of everybody else. And my success as a manager is measured in how well I can grow my team and the output of my team. And my team can't grow if they're not going to be analytical, ask questions, get daring. And so unless I'm monitoring everything they're doing and seeing where their opportunities are, and then, hello, I have a cat as well, sorry.
Hi, kitty.
What's the cat's name?
This is Mercury, and this is Lilith.
But
unless I'm actually doing all the work to grow their career, they're going to stagnate. And so what I try to push the people that I manage to do is to ask those questions, ask me, use me as a resource. I'm not here to gatekeep your career as your manager. I'm here to grow you. And a successful manager has a high-performing team that is growing, right? And so my best advice is to use your manager as that tool. So if you don't know who to turn to, say, hey, I'm interested in, you know, I've been doing encounter design for 15 years, but maybe I want to try doing quest design, or maybe I want to try to make a different game altogether. Your manager should be there for you. But again, because you have that, like, especially whenever you're newer in your career, you don't want to ask for help. You don't want to show that kind of weakness. And you want to come in with the answers and not the questions. But like, I can't stress enough, like, it's okay. So your manager is a great starting point, but also if there's someone else in the community that you admire, I mean, people have reached out to me on Twitter and asked me for mentorship. I think that the worst case scenario is I say, no, I'm sorry, I don't have time, you know? So I think that, like, again, like, just shoot your shot, because someone else is going to try to do it, you know, at some point.
Yeah. I mean, the reason that people reached out to me for mentorship, the reason I started teaching online Skype classes and then started making these videos and then launched this course and then started this podcast with Ari, right? It was just like people were reaching out being like, how do we do this? and figuring out how to deliver that to more people.
Yeah, it's just a large number of the people that I mentor don't feel like they can use their manager in that regard as someone who's there to grow them and as someone who's there to remove roadblocks for them. But I argue keep the ball in their court, because they should be responsible for your growth as well, just as much as you are, I would say.
And as someone who's run a couple of teams now, you know, one of the things is one of my fondest memories. I had a junior staff member on my team. And at the beginning, they kept asking, what should I do? What should I, what should I do? And most of my focus at that point wasn't around, you know, just giving them the information, but building up their confidence in their own decisions that they were making in the right direction. And when they were straying off, like, well, course correct and think about these things. And maybe they actually had better answers than I did. And I remember the day they flipped from, Alex, what should I do? To Alex, we should do this, and here is why. And I was like, yes, we've done it. Now they can go, right? And it's one of the most empowering feelings you can feel as a manager, because you know you've truly changed their mindset, you've instilled that confidence, and you created conditions in which they can now succeed.
Yep, that's really cool. But for somebody who doesn't have a manager yet, and I'm talking about myself because I'm unemployed, what advice do you have for somebody who is trying to break into game design, who doesn't have somebody that they can turn to yet, but is trying to bust in and find a job?
That's a really great question too. Let me back up. If you have not gotten your first job in the game industry, my first advice is, like when I started in QA, eventually I determined if the game industry was for me or wasn't for me. And I think that any kind of more entry-level job that you can take will at least help you solidify if you're going in the right direction or not. Sometimes you can't get those jobs either. But if specifically for game design, I feel like most of my learning comes from making or doing or making a reality out of something that I'm envisioning. And you can't do that unless you have some sort of professional tool that you're using. So just start making stuff. You download the portal editor and make a cool portal level, like a nice little design exercise, because you can dream on paper all day, but then like once you go to actually put those into a game, you're going to run into all these things you hadn't thought of. And it's those million little decisions, the which way does the door open? Is there a key to the door? Can you see monsters behind the door? That we call that the door problem, where you can literally answer thousands of questions about a single door. But if you're writing it down in a paper design, you might just say like, there's a door, you know? Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of editors out there. There's even like the Warcraft 3 editor is what I used whenever I was a small baby designer. Unreal, what's cool is like the Unreal Engine and Unity are so accessible now. And there's actually even courses that you can download that will teach you to make a game from scratch. They'll give you all the source files you need. One of the good sites I used for that when I wanted to learn Unity myself was actually, it's called Udemy, like U as in the letter, D-E-M-Y, Udemy. And they'll give you everything. They'll teach you how to install Unreal. They'll teach you how to do all of that stuff. And you're basically like building a portfolio, but you're also learning a lot. And so that'll be really impressive whenever you do apply for the game design jobs. Say like, hey, I actually made a level. And if you're lucky, it's a company that has released an editor, and you can say like, hey, I've actually released a level. Like if you're applying to work on Portal, like I made a couple Portal levels. So yeah, get in there and do it. And even if you're not going to use the professional tools like Unreal or Unity, get Mario Maker, get Game Builder Garage, just start building something and learning how to express a vision through the mechanics of an existing tool. And you'll level up so much, and you'll remove a lot of that doubt and that fear that you have as an associate. And then I feel like you'll like breeze right in with a little bit more confidence than maybe I had.
Yeah, and awesome. The barrier, the resistance there is way lower than it sounds right now. You know, some of these bigger tools, Unity and Unreal, can be a little hefty, but things like Mario Maker, Game Maker, they're just so easy to jump into. Make something, create something, show that you've built something, and it will just help snowball your confidence forward. I give a lot of credit to my own development, to the fact that I started in JavaScript and HTML when I was like 12, 13, right? And that was instant gratification. Put something in the page, put an input box, hit enter, the thing runs right there. When you have that sense of, I do something, I make an impact, I see the results, and you feel like you've grown a little bit, that's where all the good stuff starts. Mm-hmm. And if you can just get through the pain to get to that point, everything unlocks. Do you remember, Ari, when I recommended Twine to you?
Yes, I do.
What did you build with that, if you want to?
Oh, yeah. So I've actually built two things with Twine. I should give a little bit of background. I said I'm trying to be a game designer, but I've recently learned that designer is not technically the correct term. I'm more of a games artist because I made a lot of art and visual design stuff. But I'm learning more about game design. So Alex recommended Twine to me, and I've made two things so far. One of them is a birthday surprise puzzle for one of our friends, and I don't want to get too much into that in case she watches it. But it's got some little puzzles, and you have to solve them and enter in the answers, and I figured out how to make it so that you have to type in the right thing and it accepts it and will take you through to the next level. So that was pretty cool. And then I'm also making something else, Alex, which I didn't tell you about, I don't think.
Oh, which fun. Is secrets.
A game that I'm going to put on my website, and you play as a hiring manager, and you have to go through a bunch of different resumes and choose the best one. And if you pick the wrong one, then your boss will get mad at you. Nice. And the correct resume is mine.
I can't think of a better portfolio game, honestly. Boom.
That's brilliant.
Thank you.
Really brilliant.
So I'm still working on that, but I'll show you when it's finished.
Can't wait.
But yeah, for our artist stuff, the same thing with Khan Academy or Udemy. They'll teach you how to even install Maya for the first time or Photoshop. And it's funny you mentioned that because my niece actually expressed like the most minor amount of enthusiasm for a game development. And I bought her like 5 or 10 courses. I was like, just try any of these. And if any of these tools resonate with you, if any of this is something you like to do, let me know. And then if she didn't like any of those, I was going to be like, okay, play Minecraft. Tell me if you like building levels. Like I'm just so ready to help her. But yeah, even That's if you so don't sweet. Have someone who's going to curate that experience for you, it's kind of like it's akin to you want to make great music, but you don't know how to play the piano. And so you can hum a tune in your head, but you can't really like express it until you can play it yourself. So the tool is like the piano. And so once you get better at Blender or Maya or 3D, Photoshop or whatever,
ZBrush.
That's it. Thank you.
I'm actually, not to talk too much about myself, but in my own personal opinion, I'm pretty good with ZBrush, Maya. I'm a super proficient illustrator. I'm very comfortable using Photoshop and all of that kind of stuff. So I guess I'm just sort of in this weird place of I have a pretty decent portfolio, but like maybe it's just I haven't found the right project to apply to yet or something like that.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and that actually leads into an interesting topic maybe you could share some thoughts on, which is socializing and networking within and around the industry, right, Candace? Like, what have you learned and grown? What have you learned, like, over the course of your career about how to network, connect with people in the industry, cross jobs, things like that? And how has that helped you, or did it not help you grow as a designer?
Yeah, I'm actually the opposite. I feel like I didn't network my way into the game industry. It just kind of like happened. And I know that like a lot of people gave me that advice too of like, go to GDC, go to the parties, but it just was never for me. I didn't feel like, and I feel like that's actually really harmful advice to tell someone, like, put yourself in this potentially extremely dangerous situation with alcohol at a giant party as a woman and potentially one of the only women there. So like, I actually don't like the advice of like networking being important, because I also, like, with a passion, despise nepotism. And so like just hiring people because you know who they are doesn't feel great. But anyway, but what can be important is the sponsorship and the mentorship. So even if someone isn't going to guarantee you a job, just knowing who to ask whenever you run into roadblocks, having someone to like spitball your portfolio off of and say like, hey, I'm not getting success with this portfolio. That's the value. That's like the actual value of networking. At least it should be in my like in my ideal universe.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I always feel uncomfortable with the idea of going to big parties. I don't go to parties anyway, but especially parties with people who are not known for being the best all the time.
Yeah, good for you. I would never recommend that you do it. but then I have to ask, like, what are your at-bats? Like, and you don't have to answer this question because we're not interviewing you. but like, if you want to maximize your results, you have to maximize your at-bats, right? So you have to apply to a lot of places. You might even have to take a job that you're not super passionate about just to get some experience, like that kind of stuff. Definitely at least do still have standards, still make sure that you're getting paid, you know, make sure that you're still taking care of yourself. I think there's also a lot of another important thing to know is that if someone says no to your portfolio, it doesn't mean no forever. Sometimes it just means that someone more experienced came up, or someone with like a slightly better portfolio, or more close to the art style they were looking for. There's like 100 reasons that you don't get a job, and only one of those reasons is, nah, you weren't good enough. And so it's easy to feel like when you don't get the job that it is that answer, that there's only one answer and it's that you're not good enough. But that's just so, from how many people I've hired, there's so many times I wish I could have hired more people. Like there were 5 really strong, decent applicants, but I had to pick one. And that's really hard. So anyways, my advice is keep applying. Don't stop applying. And until they tell you like, hey, stop. I would just keep doing it, because I also, there's success stories there. Like, I mean, I'm fortunate that I got the first job that I applied for in game design, and I'll admit that. But I worked alongside another super, super talented designer who actually outleveled me very quickly, because he was so, he's very good he's like a very good ideas person, very good at execution, but also very good collaborator, which I struggled with for a very long time. And it took him, I think he applied for the WoW team 8 times before he got the job.
Wow.
Because there just wasn't the right role at the right time with the right applicant. There's just so much that goes into it. And he was definitely an asset on the team. It just, wasn't the right time. So,
Oh man. Was that Joe?
Cubit.
Oh yes. Wow. Yeah. That guy shot to manager fast. Yeah.
Very talented.
Yeah.
But I mean, sorry,
Sorry, these are all people we've, how long did we work together? Like 4 years, something like that?
Something like that, yeah. I can't remember what expansion. You left after Cataclysm, correct?
No, I left after Pandaria launched, or after the first patch, right after Cataclysm, or Mists of Pandaria patch 1 was when I departed.
That's right.
Which was funny, because when I left Blizzard at that point, I actually thought I was going to quit games completely after departing WoW. But if it hadn't been for, a couple of people who reached out to me and basically been like, hey, just not doing the right thing for the right spot at the right time. Why don't you come try help doing this with us? I wouldn't have realized everything I was capable of, And that's so easy to believe. I think that's like the fatal belief for anyone, right? Is that if I don't do this, I can never do this. When it's not true, right? The single test, the single interview, the single decision, like unless it's a life or death decision, doesn't really matter. What does matter is after the decision, do you continue to grow, or do you go, no, this isn't what I want, and go a different path, which is also okay, because those are all self-discovery and growth.
Yeah. So it's all about taking care of yourself and identifying, what you need and what you want and whether those two things are overlapping. What was I going to say? Just never stop trying, or do stop trying. If you decide it's not for you, then don't do it.
And it's okay to walk away too. That's the other thing is a lot of people I don't think realize you can walk away from the industry. I literally left the industry for 2 years and just said, I need to not be in any environment whatsoever for a while. Went and did some other stuff for a couple of years and then said, I want to work again, and then came back. And no one batted an eye at it, right?
Yeah, your achievements aren't discredited. They don't have a time limit. They're not like, oh, well, he worked on Ori, but has he been working in the last year? He's probably no good. Like, that doesn't actually happen. I remember what I was going to say. It's also completely okay to ask somebody why they didn't hire you. And you might get a response, you might not get a response. But if you really wanted the job and if you can ask really tactfully, like, hey, thank you for the opportunity to interview. Mm-hmm. I had a really good time. I really admire the team. I'm actually just curious if there was something I could work on or something that, you know, that if I wanted to apply again in the future, do you have any feedback for me? And sometimes you'll get a response.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
And that's a little iffy, right, with the bigger companies. But with some medium and smaller size companies, especially only interviewed 10 people or so, they will often do that. Mm-hmm. I actually remember, it was weird, but when I applied for the, or, you know, to work with the Aura team, it was actually they were asking me to join them. It was a weird dynamic. Anyways, they asked me to do a level design test. I'm like, I am not a level designer. I don't have the spatial reasoning. I don't have the experience. They made me go through the whole process anyways. I'm like, okay, well, fine. Terrible. I remember my colleague Chris McEntee was like, yeah, that was a pretty ripe test. I'm like, that was not. But the process afterwards of like, let's break this down and talk about what we would do differently and how we would space things and size it out helped set an understanding for the context of the culture I was applying for. And so, you know, I didn't want to be a level designer, but that feedback loop was very valuable to understand how the studio would work. Mm-hmm. Some of it positive, some of it negative, but you know. It's just feedback is so important to every human being. And if you can provide it, great. And if you can find it, great. And if you can't, then I think that's probably the hardest point, right? Where you don't know what to do. You're struggling. You're not getting the jobs. And at that point, you know, the only thing I can really say is pick one piece of your craft and push it up. Like find someone else who is a marker for you. Just push that little piece of your, one tiny piece of your craft up to level of that other person's work, right? Just one piece of it, not the whole thing. Don't diversify everything else. Just take one little bit and get it to that quality mark. And then step back and say, cool, what is something else I want to try? And then start pushing to someone else's goal. And as you do this, you'll start building skill sets like kind of like a little bit of a spider web. And you understand some of those things you need to develop in all these different pieces. If you're a scripter, how to debug better. If you're a VFX artist, how to get timing right. If you're a combat designer, right? Recreate a 2-second sequence from God of War. It doesn't matter, right? All these little exercises of building and pushing yourself in a direction will at least build up your skills and your confidence, or they'll teach you. Actually, I personally hate item design. It's not what I enjoy doing. Just, I don't like it. I've done it a couple hundred times now. And I'm like, cool, this is not a space I want to grow and develop myself. So let's not, right? Find the people who fit in your life and help you. Has there been a time in your life, Candace, where someone pointed out some piece of the puzzle that you realized you really didn't want to do and were so glad to have as a collaborator?
Yes, but I don't know if I can talk about it because it's only recently.
Okay.
Only recently has that ever happened to me, actually. I feel like...
All right. So it means that you're still growing yourself then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are things that I'm always interested in. Like, I'll give you an example of a time that is kind of like parallel to this, where I had to relinquish control of something. I was so used to in the environment in World of Warcraft, when you wanted something, there were such distinct boundaries and rules, right? Like if you wanted a poison puddle, the whole art team knows what poison is supposed to look like. Or if you wanted something like, you know, they call it a state effect. So if you're wearing like an aura on you or something, like you're wearing bloodlust, what does it look like whenever a player wears bloodlust? Like, there's all these, like, these are all these rules in place. But then I went to another team on a different project, different studio, where that wasn't set in stone yet. We didn't know what we wanted something to look like. So if you were to say like a World of Warcraft example, like, oh, we wanted shadow magic in the game. They were like, cool, okay, what does shadow magic look like? And I was like, oh, I don't know. What does shadow magic look like? Okay, well, from World of Warcraft, here's what it looks like. And I presented that to the art team. Like, here's what it could look like. And they're like, we don't like purple. And I was like, oh, okay, well, guess I'll let you guys do your thing. But like, here's my recommendation. They're like, okay, we want it to look... Let's just say they were like, oh, I want it to look red. And I was like, no, not red. It'll look like fire. And I had this notion in my head that red was always going to look like fire. Anyways, long story short, eventually I got off of my purple bus and I said, listen, if you think red can work, just do it. And it turns out it was amazing. And that was the first time I learned that, like, I don't actually have the answer to all the questions. Mm-hmm. And yeah. that it is important to rely on other people as a master. Like, this person who had been making VFX for 15 years, I balked at him, like, are you sure you can make red that doesn't look like fire? Like, that was obviously a learning point for me. But I would say, like, within design, I'm either interested or I'm not interested. So, like, things like, I'm not interested in making systems. I can. Not very interested in it. I just let them do it. Mm-hmm. Is that a bad answer?
No, not at all. No, that's a great answer.
It's good to know where you want to be, right?
Yeah.
You know, like I said, being part of the team is really important.
So. Oh, the last thing I wanted to say before we segue off of interviewing and trying to find new jobs is the other bit of advice I love to give anybody who's looking to either, like, change their career or get a new career, is don't forget to interview the company back. It's really easy to assume the power dynamic is off and that like they're only scouring me to see if I'm worthy of working for them. But you really need to be interviewing them back. Find out if their culture is right for you. Find out if their hours are right for you. Find out if their collaboration styles mesh with your collaboration styles. It's completely okay to ask those kind of questions, like, how do you resolve conflict on the team? Mm-hmm. And if you're not satisfied with that answer, you're not going to be happy at that place. And so I always take a lot of time whenever I interview people to make sure that they get ample time to ask me the kind of questions to make sure, like, hey, I've finished my assessment of you. I want to give you the chance to wholeheartedly ask me some questions about what it's like to work here, or like what's important to you as a candidate, you know, in the place that you want to work at. So I'm giving everyone permission to interview the company right back and go into that interview ready with the things that are really important to you and ask those questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really good advice. Do you have any last thoughts before we wrap up, Candace?
No.
Well, I have one little story I want to share, and it actually goes back to showing the importance of recognizing the human beings that you interact and work with. And I know I've told the story back to Candace a few times, but there was this one time, probably my third, fourth year, right, at Blizzard. And for whatever reason, something, I had broken up with someone. I was having a really bad day, and I think I've been complaining to you about the whole thing over lunch. And we're like, well, you tell me whose tires I need to stab, and I'll do it, right? And I remembered that one sentence for probably a decade now, because it was one of those signs which is like, you know you're going through pain. No, I can't fix it, but you know what? I will be there to help you if we need to get something done. And
I'm on your side.
Yeah. And those moments, right, where you show regard for the other people you work with will last for them for a lifetime. And it was offhand funny comment you made one day, right? But it made a positive impact in my life. And I'm sure everyone has those moments, those opportunities when they interact with people on their team. And I want everyone just to think about that as you're going through life. What are those little moments where you can show support and, you know, build the others up in your life?
And sorry, not sorry to the black Honda Civic parked in Fullerton. No, I'm joking. I didn't flash any tires, but I would have.
Oh no, no, that was not the girl in Fullerton. That was supposed to be the girl in Carlsbad. Oh dear.
Legal reasons, this is a joke.
Yes, this
well,
is a joke.
Candace, thank you so much. Your answers have been so insightful and thoughtful, and we really appreciate the time that you took today. Do you have any social media handles that you'd like anybody to follow you at?
Sure. I mean, if you want, my name is Candace R. Thomas. It's spelled Candace. On Twitter. I don't really use Instagram, or my Facebook's private. So yeah, if you want to find me on Twitter, that's Candace R. Thomas.
Wonderful. Awesome. Thank you so much. All right. Well, thank you to everybody who tuned in today, and I hope you all have a great rest of your day.
And don't forget to like and subscribe down below, guys. Cheers.